that chapter 6, verse number 42. And we are discussing Krishna's answer to Arjuna's question raised in verse number 37. In this verse 37, Arjuna raised the question about a devotee who follows this path of Karma Yoga. Having followed the path of Karma Yoga and purifying his mind, the devotee then devotes more time to Jnana Yoga. And in order to devote more time to Jnana Yoga, therefore this particular spiritual aspirant now reduces his time in Karma Yoga, reduces time in prayers, in rituals, in chanting mantras, etc. And he totally depends on Jnana Yoga. So Arjuna's question is, such a person, in verse 37, who is Shraddhaya Upeto, who is endowed with faith, this person has faith, but he is a ayati. Yati means one who is putting in effort. Ayati means because of various circumstances, this person could not continue to put in effort in this life. Thus, Arjuna's question is, what is the destination or the next birth of such a person? Because he neither has the support of Karma Yoga, since he has already left that path, neither has he got the support of Jnana Yoga, because he has not yet attained the knowledge. So what is going to happen to such a person? What is going to be his next birth? And Krishna gives an answer starting from verse 40 when he assures Arjuna that whatever effort is put in this life, and that also good effort. So he says Kalyanakrit. Kalyanakrit means one who is putting effort, or one who has an intention to be spiritual. So the word Kalyana we are used to because we use it for wedding, right? When somebody gets married, we say Kalyana. So even a spiritual person is said to be a Kalyanakrit. In our human life, we get married to a person, so we get worldly happiness, worldly pleasure. That's also what we call Kalyanam. We follow the scriptures, we get married for happiness and for peace of mind. But the spiritual person also has Kalyanam. Who does he get married to?
God.
So his merger or his attraction is towards God. So that's why that also is called a form of Kalyanam. Such a person whose mind is engrossed with God, such a mind who wants to attain God, but because of various reasons is not able to attain this knowledge, and if you cannot attain knowledge, you cannot attain moksha. So Krishna says there is no loss at all. There is no loss in this life, iha na amutra, neither in the next life. Meaning whatever good you have done in this life is never wasted, it is all carried forward. And the reason why it is carried forward, as we said, is because all these subtle impressions in the subtle mind are carried forward to the next birth. And therefore there are two possibilities of what can happen in the next birth. One possibility Krishna gave in verse 41, which is the person attains prapya punya kritam lokam. The loka or the worlds that he attains is punya kritam, meaning the same loka that he attains is the same loka that those people do rituals, those people who do prayers, those people who go on pilgrimage, that kind of punyam that they attain, they will go to the higher lokas. These people also will attain that similar lokas. And having enjoyed the fruits of his good actions, what happens? He says, Suchi Nam Sri Matam Gehe. Gehe, he takes birth in the house of pious Suchinam and Srimatam, who are wealthy. He takes birth in the home of those people who are cultured and who are wealthy. And we discuss why both these two components must be there. Not, he didn't say either you take birth in home of pure people or either birth in a rich house. Why is it that he takes birth in a house which has both culture and wealth? Why was that? Why both must be there?
Basic comforts.
Basic comforts must be there. Because here rich does not mean billions and billions of dollars, but it means that your basic comforts are taken care. You have a shelter, you have food, ample food to eat, and you also have money to give danam, you can do charity. So that kind of facilities are given to you. And then again, why culture also must be there? Together with wealth? So that you don't get corrupted by the money. So both are there. Culture is there, values are there, morality is there, and at the same time, security is there. So both these two components are made available to you, and that is one possibility. Then he spoke about a second possibility in verse number 42, where he said, after going to heaven and enjoying the fruits of your good actions, you come back to earth, and you take birth where? In the kule, meaning the home of yoginam and dhimatam. Again, two type of qualities must be there. Yoginam means of the yogis, and dhimatam means of those people who are well endowed with scriptural knowledge. So knowledge is there, and also what we call yogina, also yogis are there. Now, what does this mean? That this person does not have to go and search for another guru, because who becomes his guru? The parents themselves become the guru, because the parents themselves are well endowed with this knowledge. He has taken a birth in a house where the parents themselves are jnanis. Here, dhimata means they are jnanis, they have that knowledge to impart to their children. So one thing is not there. Wealth is not there. Right? So why wealth is not there? To jnanis, that is the last thing they are interested in. Right? So some basic comforts are there, but they are not they don't have that much of wealth.
Wealth of knowledge.
Wealth of knowledge is there, exactly. So, he takes birth in such an environment which is very conducive, knowledge is available, at the same time they are yogis, that means they are also performing rituals and they are performing prayers, etc. So he has the benefit of both. He knows rituals and prayers, and he also knows knowledge also. But Krishna says, this second type of birth is durlabhataram. Very, very difficult to attain. Compared to the first type of birth, where you take birth in the house of rich and pious people, is a more easier birth. To obtain birth in the home of jnanis and yogis is a very, very rare thing. So why is it rare? That's the question we asked last week. Why is it rare?
It all depends on your karmas.
Previous words, if you have reached that stage, you want to continue on that journey, then only you will go in a house like
right.
that.
But he says still, it's easier to get the other birth than this birth.
But yogis may not want to comfort family. They are already on their path and they don't want to. They don't want to go.
He says kule means family. Kule means home, family.
There won't be that many homes of such people.
So, because it is a family, that means he cannot be born in an ashram, because he is not born to a sannyasi jnani. He is born to a grihas jnani. So, how many grihas jnanis are there in this world?
Does it mean husband, wife, and children.
Both husband and wife, not sannyas.
Religious.
They are religious and knowledgeable. They have not taken sannyas. Because if they have taken sannyas, how would you be born in such a place? Yeah. Right? So it has to be a family environment where husband and wife is there, where family life is there, where prayers are practiced and knowledge also is given. And such a type of birth is rare because in the first place, how many households are like that?
And it's getting rarer now.
And on top of that, how many jnanis also are there? Isn't it? Yeah, even the jnanis also are very few. And that also, married jnanis also are even more fewer. So it is better for you to aim for that first type of birth rather than second type of birth. It's a more easier process, right? And thus, you get that ideal birth, whichever way. You get an ideal birth where all these obstacles are removed.
But the number two may be better, because then many of the people are better, but it's not easy. The first one is very comfortable already.
No, that's why he said both must be there. Suchinam, Srimatam. There must be culture, there must be values, there must be that also.
What if you pop in the second line?
Huh? Sorry?
You pop on in the second line.
You pop, you mean you progress faster?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Moksha.
Yeah.
So,
that's the
second category is more easier because there is less to renounce also, since you are not born in a rich family. There is less to give up also. So it makes it more easy.
You have to renounce a bit of poverty and all that.
Correct.
Even at a younger age itself, you are already exposed to that.
Correct.
You don't miss
that money, you don't miss all that because your interest, your mind is focused somewhere else.
That's the aim, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Yes. But again, we can't hope for and wish for because our karma brings it there.
Yes, exactly.
So however much we...
No, but then your desire also helps because where the thoughts are, you will also go in that direction also.
Yeah, but then if our karmas are bad,
of course
it's still not going to give you there.
Of course.
We won't be in this category.
We are far away, I don't know.
I tell you, any category is okay. Right? As long as you don't go down. But Krishna says you won't go down. Right?
No, you can't go down. So now the question is, if we know that we follow the spiritual path, we cannot succeed in this life due to circumstances beyond our control, then we will get an ideal birth in next life to pursue our sadhana, and obstacles which we had in this life will be removed. So next question is, very important question, will I need to start from scratch again, or will I be able to continue from where I stopped in last janma?
Continue.
In this life, I finished chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. Next slide, do I come back and start chapter 1 again or do I carry on from chapter 7?
Chapter 7. You finished 1 to 6.
So now Krishna gives the answer.
We wanted the same chapter.
But first we have to find Brother Ashok first.
No, don't find me. I'll come and find you, don't worry.
Then you see the same old chapter again.
Same old chapter again. Okay, so 43 now. Krishna gives us that answer. He says, yes, you will be born with the fruit of the past spiritual practices which you have acquired in the last janma. Everything is carried forward. That's why you find that all these spiritual giants of this janma, they also, you find that when they were born itself, from their birth itself, they already had this spiritual inclination already, right? So he says here, tatra. Tatra here means in both type of births. Whether you take birth in the home of the rich and pious, or whether you take birth in the home of jnanis, in both cases, whichever type of birth you take, he says, buddhi samyogam labhate. Labhate, he gets buddhi, the wisdom. Samyogam, he gets associated, he gets united with that wisdom which he acquired in the last birth. So all that spiritual maturity which he had acquired in the last janma, whatever viveka you had, whatever intensity for vairagya, for detachment, whatever the level of knowledge you have acquired, all of this your mind will discover in this new birth. Buddhi samyogam. You get associated or united with that knowledge. And what is that knowledge? He says, tam paurva dehikam. Tam means that knowledge which paurva means the past dehikam, which you had in your past body. Dehikam means past body or past birth. So, all that knowledge which you acquired in your last birth, you will get immediately united with that knowledge in this current birth. Now, why is that so? Why is it that you can get united with this knowledge? Right. So, we know according to the Shastras that between two births, only the physical body is different. The what we call sthula sharira. Only that physical body is different. But the subtle body known as sukshma sharira, which contains the mind, the intellect, and the karana sharira, the causal body which contains the vasanas and your karmas, that is carried forward. That is where your intellect is, all your punyam, all the viveka, all the vairagya, that does not perish. Physical body perishes, subtle and causal body takes another physical body. When the child is small, all this past knowledge is there. Only thing is, it takes time to bloom, like a tree. You put in the seed, you put in water, you have to wait for it to bloom. So that knowledge is not going to burst out immediately, but it is going to slowly and slowly start blooming in that particular person. And that's why a mother never gives birth to the subtle and causal body. The mother only gives birth to the physical body. And that's why also every child comes with their own mind, own vasanas, own inclinations. And that's why you can see in one family with two children, one can be spiritually inclined, one can be not at all interested in spirituality. Why? Because of the past vasanas. So mother gives birth to physical body, but the subtle and causal body the child has brought from the past birth. So now, in the past karmas are here, they carry you forward to this birth, and the seeker attains all that knowledge. Now, so what happens now, when these conditions, both these conditions are there? You see, we need two conditions. In order to proceed on our spiritual path, we need, number one, right environment. This is very important. We must have access to knowledge, we must have certain basic comforts must be there. So, right environment must be there. But, at the same time, what else you need? What is the second component that you need? Your inclination must be there, right? Your interest also must be there. Because environment is there, but inclination not there, it is not going to help.
The interest is already inborn in you. Correct. In your DNA.
Correct.
But it's actually your vasanas.
Yes, correct. So both are there. And if inclination is there and environment is not there, then also it's difficult to succeed. But here Krishna is saying, both are there now. Inclination also is there, carried forward from past birth. Environment also is provided for you. So both the conducive components are already there. And therefore, he says, when both these are already given to you in this birth, what happens? You have a great advantage already. So what happens, he says? So bhuya, he uses the word bhuya, tataha yatate. Tataha means after that, when he now takes this new birth, he, yatate means he strives bhuya, he strives further, he puts in even more effort. Why? Because he's got two components pushing him. The inclination is there, the environment also is there. Such a conducive environment spurs him on even more faster. So, very little effort is required. For what? Samsiddhav, for the state of perfection. To reach this state of perfection in this birth, this person has to put in only very, very little effort. And he will easily attain the spiritual goal. So he tells Arjuna, he addresses him as Kuru Nandana. Why again? To assure Arjuna, this word Kuru Nandana means joy of the Kurus, telling him that you are the glory of the Kuru dynasty. And the Kuru dynasty is a very prosperous and very cultured dynasty. So he's telling Arjuna, you don't worry, you have taken birth in the right environment. So you also have a chance to reach this spiritual goal. So now in verse 44, how does this spiritual inclination express itself in this current Janma? We must understand, now that this person has carried forward the spiritual vasanas, anything related to spirituality will automatically attract this person. Whenever he hears there is some spiritual talk going somewhere, when he hears some Swamiji has come, when he hears there are bhajans being sung, he is immediately attracted. So wherever there is satsang, such a person immediately runs to that place. He has a strong attraction. So Krishna says, tena, by that, eva purva abhyasa. Abhyasa means by the past practice in the past birth, that habit is now carried forward into this life. The vasanas are carried forward, and thus kriyate, he is attracted to anything connected to spirituality. And on top of that, he says avasa api saha. Avasaha means in spite of himself, he doesn't even have to think about it. Immediately something he hears spiritual, he is immediately attracted. There is no, how you say, effort for him to put. It is very natural. It comes to him very naturally. So avasa, even despite his will, despite his free will, he is also pushed forward also. Without any deliberate planning, he doesn't have to think, how am I going to progress spiritually? He is just pulled forward and carried forward by this internal pressure. And we have seen this in the lives of many saints who were born in rich families. The family expected the child to follow the family business. But when he came of age, what did he say? I am not at all interested. I want to become a yogi.
Buddha is one of them.
And one very... Sorry?
Ananda
Krishna's son. Yes, very good. And recently we also had to meet Swami Swarupananda, who came here. He was born in a very rich business family in Hong Kong, and at the age of 17 or 18, he told us a story. He told his parents, I want to take up sannyas. And the mother cried because she couldn't take it. But today he is very happy. He is roaming all over the world, he is giving spiritual lectures, and he is a very contented person.
He can afford to do that because his family doesn't need his help.
His whole family fell into poverty. His father passed away, and all the debtors came chasing to them, and they lost everything, their house, their money, everything. And he went to Ramakrishna, and Ramakrishna told him, have faith, you will find the solution to both. And both came at the same time. You know, the money also came in, and his spirituality also progressed also. So if that interest is there, a pathway will be found for him, right? So here he says, jignyashu api. From a ordinary person, he becomes a jignyashu. A jignyashu means one who is seeking knowledge, one who has thirst of knowledge. So although he has brought that force with him from the past birth, this force now pushes him to know more and more about God, more and more about his destination in life. So he becomes a jignyashu. He starts seeking that knowledge. And in his case, his knowledge is like a little small flame, or rather like a flame that all you need to do is fan it a bit and it becomes a big fire. So very little effort has got to be put. As we saw in the case of Arjuna also, he came to the battlefield, although he was in so much of distress, yet what did he do? He had the thirst to seek knowledge from Krishna. So he surrendered to Krishna and immediately sought knowledge also. So he says such a person becomes a jignyashu, has a thirst for knowledge, and shabda brahma ativartate. Ativartate means he goes beyond. Shabda means words of Brahma. Now what does words of shabda brahma mean? Shabda brahma here indicates the karma kanda portion of the Vedas, which speak about rituals, prayers, mantras. He goes beyond that. That means what? Those prayers and rituals are not attractive to him. He is not interested in that anymore. He has already gone beyond that. He is, because why? In the past birth, he had already reached that state, and now he goes beyond that already. So, Shabda Brahma Ativartati. He goes beyond those rituals, beyond those prayers, beyond those what we call mantras, and he goes straight away to seek knowledge, jignyashu. He becomes a jignyashu. So, which means what? Sorry?
Basically, all of us, even we want to reach there,
right,
we all have to go through that.
Correct.
You know, the rituals and all, we all want to do that. Unless we have gone through it, we can't reach there. Then only we have the real satisfaction and the knowledge.
Correct. Then the thirst for knowledge comes in. If we have gone through the rituals, the prayers, the mantras, the mind gets purified, it will start seeking knowledge. Right? So, now that means he is not interested in finite results. Because this is what rituals bring to us. Rituals can only produce finite results. They cannot take us to the infinite Brahman. So this person is not interested in finite results, what the world can offer him. He wants to go for the infinite also. So now, in verse 45, what is the journey of this spiritual seeker? Now that he has reached this state where he is seeking knowledge, what is the nature of the spiritual seeker? Here the word yogi is used in the second line. Yogi means that this spiritual seeker, who is a jignyashu, who has a tendency for knowledge, samsuddha kilvisha. Samshuddha means he is free, he is pure, shuddham, you know, we use the word shuddham, that what we light, that white camphor, sodham, you know, what do you call it?
Sudham.
Sudham, right? So that signifies purity. So samsuddha means he is free from what? Kilvisha, from purities, impurities. His mind now is free from impurities due to all the past actions in the past world. So now, how do you know if mental purity is there? What is the sign of mental purity?
Peace and contentment.
Peace and contentment, what else?
You look at everything.
Look at everything.
Look at everything equally, you know, discrimination.
Equally, okay. What else?
Detachment.
Detachment. That means what? There is spiritual inclination. All the while there are spiritual thoughts. Whether towards detachment, or equanimity, or whatever it is, there are only pure and spiritual thoughts. That is an indication of the sign of mental purity also. So how did he attain this mental purity? Aneka janma sham siddha. Aneka, many janma, many births. He attained this sham siddha, this state of perfection. It has been acquired through repeated births. So it is not a overnight process. We all have gone through repeated births also. To attain this purification, many janmas we have gone through also. So now he has no more attraction for material pleasures. His thoughts are totally different now. There is clarity regarding the primary goal of life. So as you know, there are four purusharthas. The scriptures tell us dharma, kama, artha, moksha. This person is not interested in dharma. Dharma means prayers and rituals. Neither is he interested in kama, pleasures, nor artha, possessions. He has only one goal, that is moksha. That's why moksha is called the param purushartha. That is his only interest in life now. And that is because of his purity of mind. It is because of the past births, aneka janma. And thus, prayatnat yatamanas. Yatamanas means he applies himself with even greater effort. Prayatana means he puts in even greater effort. So more than what he put in the last life, now with all the obstacles removed, with the force of his past birth, he puts in even greater effort. And simple example we can see is when students are sitting for an exam. The whole year they play the fool, and then when exam is 2 weeks away, what do they do? Suddenly they start studying, put in so much of effort just to sit for the exam. But that student who has put in effort throughout the year, now what has he got to do when he is near the exam? Just put in a little bit effort. So here this person is pushed to just put in some effort, but he sees results immediately. He is able to realize things immediately. And thus Krishna says, Tatha, thereby param gatim yati. Yati means he achieves what? Param, the highest, gati means goal, which is moksha. So he will attain that goal very easily with very little effort.
The very few people.
Very few people, unfortunately. Hopefully we are among those.
We are in the queue. We are in the queue.
Yeah. At least Dato say we should be in the queue, we should not be somewhere else. At least we are in the queue. So now, with previous verse 45, answer to Arjuna's question about this yoga brashta, meaning one who has fallen off the path of yoga in the past life, what happens to him? Krishna has already answered. So which means all of you should not be pessimistic for attending Gita class.
Don't
Why?
Give up.
Don't give up.
Why should you not be pessimistic?
Surely,
but even if you get asked, next verse we will continue.
You continue. Next verse continue from where you left off.
Minimum, you will get swarga by listening to this knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Which I will be explaining.
Huh? When we come back, we won't remember.
No, no, no. You don't have to remember. He said in chapter 18, you listen to this knowledge, whether you understand or not, also you will get swarga. So minimum, even if you come and make so many notes and you don't understand anything, at the end of this you will get swarga. Notebook will get moksha. You will get swarga. Minimum. Maximum, if you understand this knowledge, you get moksha. So never ask the question, when will I attain moksha? Will I ever attain moksha? Just put in the effort. Okay? So now, in the last two verses of this chapter, Krishna will glorify this highest path of meditation. Because he has taken us from Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga to Dhyana Yoga. So now he wants us to understand the importance and the glory of this state of meditation. And this type of sadhaka he calls as a yogi. So the word yogi used in verse 46 means this meditator who has gone through several births, purified himself, gone through Jnana Yoga, and now is able to sit in a state of meditation. So he compares this with other types of spiritual people, other types of spiritual practices also. So he says, tapasvibhya. Tapasvibhya means those spiritual people who practice all kinds of austerities. Tapas. Right? All kinds of austerities, be it fasting or whatever kind of austerity. So, there are some devotees who just practice austerities. Okay? Second type of devotee, Jnanibhya. Jnanibhya means those who are committed to Shravanam Mananam. Listening, reflection. Listening, reflection. Okay, another set of seekers. Karmibhya. Karmibhya means those spiritual seekers who are committed to karma yoga, to selfless action. So among all these three devotees, he compares it to the fourth type of devotee, who he calls the yogi, which means who is the meditator, who has reached the state of nididhyasana. If you remember, jnana yoga is about three steps: sravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. So here this jnanibhyo, which is mentioned in the second line, is one who does sravanam, mananam, but does not come to nididhyasanam. That means he does not come to meditation. He is just content with the knowledge. But now Krishna is comparing these three type of devotees to a yogi. So he says what? Tapasvibhyo yogi adhikaha. Adhikaha means higher. This yogi, who is the meditator, is more higher or more superior than one who only does austerities. So one who just keeps on engaging in austerities but doesn't progress in spirituality, this meditator is more superior to that person. Then jnanibhya api yogi adhikaha. This yogi is adhikaha, he is also superior to those people who only are interested in acquiring knowledge and they don't go beyond that, because we have been told in chapter 6 that after knowledge we have to engage in meditation, we have to move to the final stage. So he says this meditator, who is called nididhyasanam, is more superior than one who is just acquiring knowledge. And karmibhyascha yogi adhikaha. This yogi is also more superior than one who is only engrossed in doing selfless action. Therefore, Arjuna, if you want moksha, guru can help, but you have to put in your own effort also. Right? So, you have to come to knowledge, and from knowledge you have to progress to meditation. Therefore, he says in the last line, verse 46, Tasmat yogi bhava Arjuna. Therefore, Tasmat Arjuna, may you become bhava, may you become a yogi. Meaning, may you progress to the highest stage, which is meditation. So don't just listen and listen to the knowledge. Do reflection, mananam, but also come to the final stage of meditation.
One question.
Yeah.
I was listening to a tape today. That tape also gave way, so I couldn't repeat it. This says, he's talking about Bhajagovinda. But he says, knowledge is a useless tinsel if it cannot be converted into bhakti. Now, I don't see the word bhakti anywhere here. He says, knowledge is of no use if it's not bhakti. It must be converted to bhakti.
See, we must
where does it fit in here?
We must understand the definition of bhakti.
I wouldn't know what the definition
what is. What is the definition of bhakti? You have to come back in chapter 12, then I'll explain.
Okay.
No, 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 just joking. See, bhakti means what? Bhakti means devotion to Lord. Now, if I do action, karma, without bhakti, what does it become? Just becomes karma. But if there is bhakti, devotion to Lord, and with that devotion to Lord, I do my actions, karma becomes karma yoga. With that bhakti, without that bhakti, if I just do prayers, offer flowers, leave to God, just offer, without that devotion to God, that upasana becomes what? Just wasted. But with bhakti in upasana, it becomes upasana yoga. Same thing again. If I study knowledge without any devotion to God, I have knowledge. But what is the use when I don't have the love for God? So when bhakti is there, jnana, it becomes jnana yoga.
And then he says, bhakti and knowledge are one and the same thing. It ends up at you.
So the question is,
how it merges.
Chapter 12 tells us that there are five levels of bhakti. So bhakti has got to be applied in karma, it has got to be applied in upasana, it has got to be applied in jnana. And thus it becomes karma yoga, upasana yoga, jnana yoga. So devotion must be there in all. Doesn't mean that once we have knowledge that we don't have devotion for God. Right? So Tasmat Yogi Bhava Arjuna. That is the advice to Krishna, to Arjuna by Krishna. Now, the glory of the Vedantic meditator, Krishna says, is the greatest sadhaka. And here now in verse 47, he says, he describes this yogi now. What is this yogi? He says, Yaha he who madghatena, you look at the second line, madghatena antaratma mam shraddhavam mam bhajate. Now what he means here is, this yogi now, madghatena means he is totally absorbed in me. His thoughts are always focused and fixed on me. And thoughts from where? Antaratmana means from the mind. Mind, and with Shraddha, with faith, he worships me. So this yogi, his mind is totally engrossed, totally absorbed in me, and with faith he continues to worship. That's why he still emphasizes on the path of Shraddha, the faith. Faith must be there. Not only faith must be there, bhajate. Bhajate means worship. Worship must not be kept aside. Just because we have knowledge, just because we reach meditation, doesn't mean we give up worship. So worship of the Lord also must be there. So with your mind fixed to me, now with your mind fixed on me, then the question will come, of course, who is this me? Mam, the what he says in the third line, you see the word mam, fix your mind on me. Who is this me? So this, who is this me, will be explained in the next six chapters. In the next six chapters, Krishna will talk about himself. He will introduce himself. What is God? Who is God? What is the nature of God? And he will talk a little bit about creation also. So you see, every last verse connects again with the next chapter or next six chapters. So here now, since Krishna has said this yogi has got his mind fixed on me, obviously the next question will come to us, who is this me? And I want to know. So the next six chapters, Krishna will talk about himself, will introduce himself. So he says, Shraddha with faith has his mind fixed on me. I consider such a devotee, Saha Yukta Atma. He is the best. Yukta Atma. Sorry, Yukta Uttama. Uttama means the highest. Yukta means one who has merged with me. The one who is the most closest to me. So he is the greatest yogi of all, who has his mind continuously fixed on me, who has faith and worships me with that faith. And Krishna says, Sarvesham Yoginam. Sarvesham, among all the yogis who are devoted to knowledge, who are devoted to tapas, who are devoted to karma yoga, among all these yogis, I consider that person, that meditator, the most greatest. And Krishna says, Me Mataha. This is my opinion. This is my, my opinion, right? Me Mataha. This is what Krishna is giving his conclusion. So therefore, we all have to come to this higher state of meditation. So thus ends chapter 6 of the Gita. Now, we have 25 minutes, as I said last week. We can have any questions over the past chapters which we have covered, or anything that you have doubts to clear up. If no question, we go home now. But last week, we had a very nice 1.5 hour question and answer session in Bamsa. It was quite, I mean, we had so many questions, there were a tremendous amount of questions. Yes,
Is there a difference between Jeev and Atma?
Okay, the same question was asked last week also. What's the difference between Jeeva and Atma, right? Okay. So to understand this, take a simple example. Sun, and this is a okay. I think some of you remember this. Now, therefore, sun represents Brahman or Atman is one and the same. There is no difference between Brahman and Atman. So therefore, what is Jiva? The reflected sun in the mirror is the Jiva. This is the original reflection, or rather this is the reflected or reflection. Now therefore, what happens? We say at time of death, Atman cannot travel. Why?
It pervades
everywhere. So what pervades everywhere cannot travel. Okay? But yet in chapter 15, he says what? In chapter 15, if we look at verse 7, page 272. Chapter 15, verse 7, page 272, it says, the jiva in the body, is an eternal portion of myself. Myself meaning Brahman. The jiva is an eternal portion. Meaning, why eternal? Chapter 15. 15 verse 7, page 272. A very famous verse, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loki. No beginning, no end. Because as long as there is creation, the Jiva will always be there. Right? So he says now, seated in Prakriti. What is Prakriti? Nature meaning the body. The frame represents the body. The frame represents the body. What does the mirror represent?
Body.
Frame represents the body.
Huh?
Represents the subtle and the causal body. This is the gross body. Okay? Now, at time of death, what happens? This is the new body or new frame. At time of death, look at verse 8, chapter 15, verse 8, page 273. When Jiva takes up a body and when he leaves the body, he takes the subtle and causal body and he comes to the new body. So, Jiva is what? Is the traveling soul. Now the reflection is always in the mirror. What travels is the mirror travels here to here. This frame now is broken. What do we do with the body? We cremate. So the frame is now broken. The mirror is taken out from here, and as long as the mirror is there, the Jiva exists. So it comes to the new body.
So you say the mirror is the Jiva.
No, the mirror is the subtle and the causal body. The Jiva is the reflection in the subtle and causal body. So when the body dies, we cremate, the subtle and causal leave to find the new body, the Jiva reflection is always there. It travels. So this Jiva is the false ego. As long as the ego exists and identifies with the body, the Jiva will continue to exist. The only time the Jiva goes away is when the subtle and causal body are gone. There is no more place for the Jiva to reflect. So the Jiva is the traveling soul. In the Mundaka Upanishad, it is very beautifully explained that there are two birds sitting on a tree. One is called the Jiva bird and one is called the Atman bird. Two birds sitting on a tree, the tree meaning the body. So in this body also we got two. We have Jiva, which is the reflected consciousness, and we have the Atman, which is all-pervading, which gives life to this body, which gives essence to this body, right? So what's the difference with these two birds? It is said the Jiva bird is looking at the fruit on the tree, and is continuously eating the fruit on the tree. Meaning, the jiva is a deluded ego thinking I'm the body and enjoying or suffering whatever the body is suffering. Because why? Sometimes the fruit is sweet, sometimes the fruit is bitter. What about the Atman bird? The Atman bird is watching the jiva bird. It is not looking at the fruit. It is the witness watching what the jiva is doing. You see? So that is the beautiful explanation given to us. And here also it says, when jiva leaves the body.
How often this Atman bird, that means when we self-reflect in the, you see, Atman bird, really we don't feel it. You see, it's like in our body.
We don't realize it.
Actually, you are the Atman bird. What the scriptures are telling you, you are the Atman bird. But right now you are saying, I am the jiva.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, see, then when we start getting to the day-to-day life,
that's when you identify with body. That's when you say, I am the jiva. The jiva always identifies with the body. So the word ahamkara, ego, comes from the word ahamkarta, which means I am the doer. Once we say, I am the doer, which means you identify with body. So when we ask the question, who are you? You say, I am the wife of so-and-so, I am the husband of so-and-so, I am the daughter or son of so-and-so. You never say, aham atma asmi. Right? Because all the time we are thinking of that one. Then once you say, I am this body, that means everything connected to this body also now you identify. This is my possession, this is my family, this is my company, this is my car. Right? So that's when all our problems start.
Where does the mind come in?
The mind is the subtle body.
The
subtle body consists of mind, intellect, ego. The causal body consists of the vasanas. Okay, so now that jiva we must understand is a false ego, and it will go only when the subtle and the causal body do. What do you call sukshma sharira, karana sharira? Okay, any other questions? The false eye, the small eye. Yeah, or rather the big eye, whichever way you want to decide.
I've always had difficulty trying to understand this.
This took me 10 years to understand. I could never understand this. It took me almost.
Every time Pandaji tells me that is jiva and atma, they're two different things.
Yeah.
I said, how can that be two different things?
Yeah.
At the same time, you say atma is only a witness.
Yes.
At the same time, you say, your vasanas go with the Atma, but actually not the Atma, goes with the...
That's why we say Atma Shanti prayers. At least Jiva Shanti prayers. But if you tell people Jiva Shanti prayer, they get confused. Right. So it's only after reading the Mundaka Upanishad that this whole thing became very clear. So that explains so beautifully the two birds sitting on the tree. Yes.
You think that what our mindset is at the time of death.
That's right.
That is where it will take us in our next incarnation.
Yes.
So that means, for instance, if you like a certain person in this life, or you see the person as your role model, and you're continuously in that
attached to that person.
Attached, you're very attached. So does that mean that in your next birth, that person comes back as what you wished for?
I mean, not necessarily that person, but that type of person with that type of characteristics, maybe it will drag you, to pull you in that kind of direction. Not necessarily that person. But what are you attracted to is the characteristics, the values that that person has. So that means if you are attracted to good values, that means you will go towards that direction where you get into an environment of people who have those kind of values.
It's not the person. Say for instance you are very attached to your father.
Right.
And
right.
You admire your father. Your father means everything to
correct,
you.
Correct.
And
this is fasting. Oh, you're fasting. Okay, Navaratri. This is we have become proud grandparents.
Oh, congratulations. Congratulations.
Pass it on.
You can bring next week early.
So when say he goes and say you're attached to your father so
much, okay,
okay, and then you've lost him,
right,
and you keep and like
thinking,
you keep
about him,
thinking about him, and you hope that you would, that he would come back into your life once, and you hope that he'll be in your next incarnation or subsequent. Is that possible?
Well, the thing is, when you say you're attached to him, you're attached to certain characteristics and values, not to the person,
person
per se, right?
Yeah.
So you would probably come into that kind of life where you meet somebody who has a similar kind
similar
of values.
And it will not be,
yeah,
it will
not be
him,
but
yeah,
person who has the same values.
Same value, right?
Yeah.
And how do you explain that sometimes when you, you know, when you meet in life, like you know, a certain person,
yeah,
like you just feel
immediately
that
there's
known,
an attraction to
yeah, attraction,
yeah.
You feel that you've known,
known
that
him
person
for
a long,
for a long time.
Is that that he's a friend of the past?
You see, don't forget, we also carry the vasanas from previous births.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps some interaction we've had that with that person is deeply ingrained in our consciousness also. And that's why when they can put you in a state of hypnotism, they can make you remember the past births also.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? All the seeds of the past births are there in your causal body. So sometimes there is a very rare chance that something arises from
mm-hmm.
that causal body, but it's very, very rare that you can tap so deep into that experience. But there are people who can help you to get into that, right?
Past life regression can bring about
many
all these things.
Yes.
Yes. Many lives in that they say,
yeah,
that my past was that person
yes,
who has been,
yes,
but now he is
yeah,
a friendly thing.
Correct.
Yes.
It's there because you are carrying
there
it all in your karma sharira.
Yeah.
Actually, I read a small article on this. He says it's just like nowadays, everything downloaded into your CPU.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can extract this past information.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what the doctors and psychiatrists can do. And it's all buried inside, taken with your subtle body.
Subtle. There are these yogis who got these powers.
Yeah,
that's why they can read your past and they can read your future.
So
they have this, if you read this book, Living with the Himalayan Masters.
Yeah,
you see that he has met this kind of people. And another book I'm reading now is called A Journey Home by Radhanath Swami, who has met this kind of great people who have the powers to read the past and read your future and tell you what you're thinking. So they have met all these kind of great masters, but they're all in the Himalayas. They don't want to come out and
all the siddhas are there. We don't even know. They say they are in caves.
Correct.
We can't even see them and feel them.
They are not interested to come out and show to the world their power, but they have gained this through their tapas, through their austerities, through their whatever prayers and all that.
In what way is astrology
What role does astrology play in Bhagavad Gita? Astrology is prarabdha karma, what we are born with. There are certain things going to happen. But what Bhagavad Gita says, most important is your free will. So understand that your past karma does have an effect on your life, but don't forget you also have free will. You have effort, you can put in that effort.
You have to do work.
You have to do work. But if you put in effort and supposing you cannot remove the effect of the past karma, then you have to accept. How you accept? By surrendering that to God and accepting. So put in and change whatever you can change, put in effort and accept what you can't change.
It's the prarabdha karma like you say, but then according to astrology, some of them they say in certain time when at certain time you are born and this and that, that's why this thing is happening.
Correct.
But this thing is happening because of our
past karma. Yes,
so why does that time has to play that?
So everything is like a seed which you put in. Some seeds give fruit faster, some take longer time to give fruit. So every karma takes, some bear quick fruit, some take longer time. Like last week one person asked a question in the Saturday class. In his horoscope, his father wanted him to get married, so showed his horoscope to many priests. All the priests said one thing. Your son will either get married at the age of 26 or I think it was 45 or something like that. Either of these two stages, every priest said the same thing. He said, I refused to get married. Whatever proposal came, I pushed it aside. I was not interested. I was only interested on the spiritual path. But every priest said, you will get married at 26 or 46. Now he's 49, he's not married. So why? Because, no. One thing also we must understand. No doubt the free will is there, but there are three types of past karmas that also come into this life. One is called dridha, which means fixed, which means there's nothing you can do about it. If that person is supposed to come into your life, no matter what effort you put in, somehow or other, you'll meet and marry that person. Okay? That because that effect of that karma was very strong. No doubt you put in a lot of effort to avoid that marriage, but somehow you got married. Okay? Then there is one called adridha, which means it's not so strong. That means some effort you put, you can push aside that karma. And the third type of karma is called dridha, adridha, which means partly fixed, partly not fixed. So some you can dilute through your effort. That's why sometimes the priest tells you every Saturday go and feed the pigeons, every Wednesday go to this temple, break 5 coconuts. Meaning what? You are trying to dilute that past karma. But if the karma is too strong, no matter what you do, you find that you can't beat it. Right? So you have to understand this. The problem is we do not know what type of karma is coming. We can only put in the effort and surrender to God.
Rituals matter.
So rituals matter, yes. With faith, you put in the ritual. And then if you are able to dilute it, what they call prayaschit karma. What's the English word for prayaschit?
Repentance.
Yeah, you do repentance. You say this bad time you are going through, you go and do some penance to dilute that effect. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Why? It all depends on the strength of the past karma.
I want to ask something about karma. When the earth was created at the beginning, there was no karma. So how did the karma come about? And there were many other planets too. And would there be migration from one planet to another?
I can only answer this question if you can answer me the question. Did the seed come first or the tree came first? Did the seed come first or the tree came first? See, nobody can answer this question. Did the karma come first or the person came? The person came first, where did the karma come from? Karma came, where did the person come from? So until we can answer this question, did the seed come first or the tree came first? Or did the chicken come first or the egg come first?
What about the other planets in the universe? There are many planets.
Right,
right. So, could there have been life in some other planets and...
Basically creation came about everything, the planets, right from the beginning from God. The question is only where the karmas came from. If at the beginning all started as pure, where did the karmas come from? But then we mustn't forget one thing. Also our Hinduism is cyclical. So it's like a circle. Circle means you don't know where is the beginning, where is the end. It is our creation is not given as what we call linear.
But then they do say it started out, there's one theory, it's from water.
But there's life. Life started from water. Yes. Like they say, the first avatar was the Matsya avatar, the fish avatar. So everything started from water. But where did the first karma come from? It was like a cycle.
Adam and Eve.
Blame Adam and Eve.
But in the first creation, when they got created man, it was one, right? One and one, right? Adam and Eve. It's one. He didn't have a big population, right?
We
kept expanding, right?
Right.
So, how do you explain that? Because it went on. So the karmas kept on expanding, and then it went to different people, isn't it?
Because
when you start off, it's just one person. If you just put like Adam and Eve in the picture.
Right.
And so they committed a sin.
Right.
All right. And then from there it got transmitted. So you mean the sin?
I think the children were too boys.
No. The thing is, you have to go to chapter 10, verse number 6. Chapter 10, verse number 6. Page 182.
Okay.
See, this is how he's talking about the earlier creation. The first thing that was born are the Manus, the four ancient Maharishis. So these are born from the mind. They are called Manasa Putra. They were not born through normal conception.
Brahma created them.
And then they were given the order, go forth and multiply. So then they went forward and multiplied. And that's from there, the whole population started.
No, I don't think so. I think he had to create Manu.
Yeah.
Manu was the first.
Hey, the Manus all born of my will. It's mentioned there.
I thought that was the first man was Manu.
Yeah, correct. But then there are also the seven Sapta Rishis.
Sapta Rishis,
Sapta Rishis. And then before that there were this, what you call the Sanata Kumara.
So then they asked Sanatanandan to, they refused to
operate.
So then only the Manu ended.
So then he had to create again the seven Sapta Rishis, and then from their creation basically started. No? That's why we are descendants of Manu, we are called Manushya.
But why we also not created in the same way, not in the physical form of creation?
No, this was the physical form of creation.
No, when the Manus, you see the Manu was not
Manus
the,
were created from the mind,
way, right?
And then they were told to go and procreate.
Yeah, but why didn't
he create more?
Why did God continue creation
from his mind?
That way itself?
Good question.
He being God, comes from God,
right?
Like, so when we say that we discover something, actually it is God has put it. Okay?
Right.
So then even a bad thought, you know, if you analyze that, where is a bad thought? Like, you know, I just sit here and a bad thought comes. Where did the bad thought come from?
Right.
It actually started from where? From God's mind.
No,
where did it come?
Bad thought came because there's lack of good thoughts.
But if you build up your mind, you know, in the beginning, we're talking about beginning, it was just good thoughts. So there was no room for bad thoughts.
That is why in the early days, there's only Satyu. There were no bad thoughts at that.
Yeah. So where did
When he created purity.
Okay.
So I don't forget, he also put in sattvic, rajasic, tamasic.
Yes, the putra, all these come
from So now, we are supposed to be very sattvic, but we also need rajasic for activity, and we need rest, tamasic. But our problem is, we allow the tamas to, because of why? Because of our free will. We allowed rajas and tamas to predominate and sattva to go down. So then that's what happened, because he gave creation or humankind the freedom.
But he knew when he was creating, he's God.
Right.
He knew that that part of him is going to behave that way. You see, if he's God and he has given that.
Right, the freedom.
But he knew that what his whole Laila was going to be like.
Correct.
So how can say that God wants it, that he feels for us, but he gave us free will and he can't do anything about it because he's given us free will. But he feels sorry for us that he has put us like that.
No.
In the first place, why did he put it? He's God. He knew that was going to happen.
Now look at page 105, chapter 5, verse 14.
105, chapter 5, verse 14.
The Lord determines neither the doership nor the doings of beings. Whatever you want to do, you have to pay the price for it. So that freedom has been given to you. He doesn't interfere, and even the union with the fruit of action, he has created a law of karma, he has created human beings, given them the freedom, and the law of karma regulates what happens to the human beings. So he is just the master planner. He's put everything there, he's given human, he's given animals, he's given plants and all that. To humanity, he's given the intellect to think. And he has equipped them with a free will to make a choice. So he says he doesn't interfere. If you do good, you get good. You come back to him. You do bad, you suffer, you go further away from him. It is your choice.
The thought of bad thing into the person.
Because of free will.
It was all in equilibrium.
Sattvic, rajasic, tamasic was all in proper proportion. With our free will, we upset the whole equilibrium.
Yeah, the first creation was like,
Manu, they were not pure.
Maybe
Satyug, they were not
the
pure.
The desire that came in.
Yeah.
For certain things.
No.
There you are. Getting your rubber. I think that's how they were so.
And out of free will, we have strengthened the rajasic and tamasic qualities.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the thing is, we chose it, not God chose it.
And we're getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
The way things are going.
No, but then
the
he knew what was going to happen.
He's a master planner. He knew what
was going to happen. It's just like he seemed like a lila for him, you know. He's enjoying himself.
Hey, it could be a lila still. We don't know.
No, but when you say he knows what's going to happen,
now
you are predicting, you are saying that the world is a bad place.
No, we say
the world is a bad place.
No, we're not saying
it's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
So he knew what's going to happen, something beautiful was going to happen.
Yeah.
So we should look at it positively and say he created a beautiful world. Right? Why do we look upon it and look at the evil in the world and say that he knew that was going to happen, why did he let it happen? I rather look at it that way and say he created beauty in the world.
We got to have the cycle. Now we are going through Kaliyuga. We have Satyuga also. For that pralaya must take place first.
Yeah.
So it goes down pralaya and then back to Satyuga.
In fact, very good you say that, because now our question is how to get out of the cycle. That's what we should question ourselves. Right. How to get out of the cycle. That is what the scriptures are teaching us.
But it's not very typical. It's not easy.
It's not easy, yes. No. Yes.
So that's why
yes,
they say that they say that the spiritual path is like a
razor blade, like walking on the edge of a razor blade.
Yes, it's true. It's very
difficult. Like he said, it is our last, our last karmas, that we are today sitting and we are in the good sattva.
Right.
Because of our last karmas, we had the capacity, or we had the comfort of coming here and sitting and learning.
Correct.
So after even if you're halfway, we're gone, the next birth we might be having another better satsang or whatever.
Chapter 7. One more chapter 6.
Bad action, it gives you bad karma.
Right.
But if somebody committed, especially when you're younger, you're ignorant, and you don't know that it's wrong. Okay? Say your parents never told you, or you just don't know. And you did that.
In ignorance, you commit.
Yeah, in ignorance. Is that taken as bad karma?
According to the scriptures, they say the first 7 years, if you do anything, there is no effect.
Okay.
But after a point when you get certain amount of maturity, then you have to take responsibility for your actions.
For anything that you do.
Like even out of ignorance.
Is that?
Yeah.
Like say a child goes to a store and he picks up, he doesn't realize that
he's stealing.
Right. But is that considered?
But that's what, I've talked to people, they said, I think it was 7 years, that's what they told me. For the first 7 years, anything done in ignorance is excused. But after that...
I think my mother used to say that for children, all forgiven.
Children is forgotten.
But I think chapter 15, they say you must follow the ordinance of the scriptures.
Chapter 16, end of chapter 16. Follow the ordinance of the scriptures.
So all those things like we used to kill cockroaches and all that is a sin. Cockroach is not doing anything, right?
We want to
kill it because we say it's dirty, we are scared of that. So that is considered a sin.
Actually, even now we kill cockroaches. For what? For our protection. So nothing wrong. Isn't it? If you see the mosquito coming to attack, you have right to kill the mosquito.
Flies.
You can kill now until you reach the movie stage.
So same like flies was a good question.
Okay, so
if we just allow flies to roam around,
so
it's going to poison our food and all that, right?
So those kind of things. But you told us a story where the guy had,
Bhishma Pita.
Bhishma Pita had the arrows and then he asked why. And
because
then
he poked the insect.
He poked the insect and he has so
but
fun. But
no. But he did it with relish, with delight to cause pain. to inflict pain.
Okay, but then what he got is much more magnified, isn't it? You see, the law of karma didn't give him the same kind of thing.
You see, again, sometimes these stories are there to teach us a lesson. We must not take it literally that if I go and kill this insect, I'm going to be shot with 72 arrows or something like that. But these are to teach us a lesson that we should not deliberately go into. Supposing you go and deliberately go and hunt a creature, that with motive, with that kind of that, then you pay back. But if you are supposing the animal is attacking you, then you have to protect yourself. So the motive is very important. You must understand that.
After
you
told
that
story about that.
Yeah, so I remember
the insect is sort of in the mind, like,
oh, his case was deliberate. He took the insect, he broke the twig, and he stabbed the insect many times with the twig. So he wanted, so then he had to pay back. So Arjuna had to come back and shoot the arrows into him, that bed of arrows. That Bhishma Pita.
Yeah, but then there's another story also it explains this. See, Bhishma Pitama was protecting Duryodhana because he had taken the vow to protect
the kingdom.
He was attached to the throne.
Yeah.
So although he knew about this, what Duryodhana was doing
is wrong,
but he had vowed to protect the
kingdom.
To his father.
Yeah.
So he was serving. But what in our scriptures is written, if you have taken the food from the person whose earnings are not pure, is done the wrong way, so then you are to be paid for it. So it says before he wanted to go up, so whatever he has taken with Duryodhana while he was serving him, he has taken his salt, his food. So he wanted to take out that. And that's why he was there for that many days on that
That's why you see, although he had the choice to leave his body whenever he wanted, he promised his father that until Hastinapura is secure, he won't leave his body. And also when he left his body, it was Uttarayana.
He was waiting for that. Hastinapura has
to be
secure.
So
when he handed over to Yudhishthira, so that's what this is, when 2 weeks when he was all the, whatever food which Duryodhana, that's what in our scripture is written, we must not go and eat in everyone's place because you don't know the type of food they have earned, which way, the right
not
way. And many of our saints and all, they don't go and eat everyone's house.
You see, but supposing you're invited to somebody's house and you do not know and you eat, so what can you do?
Offer it to the Lord first.
What can you do?
You pray first before you eat.
Chapter 17, verse 23. Om Tatsat. Purifies everything. Okay, so we end. So next week we will start on chapter 7 and with the prayer.
Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Janura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishna Vande Jagat Guru.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Before I come to class.